and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And yes, we apologize. It's Friday late afternoon as we're recording this. Yes, we usually record this on Thursday evening, so you can have it for your Friday morning commute to work or at the gym or however you listen to this. I apologize. It's been an incredibly busy week for me with everything I'm trying to do for GI. And then put that together with that I am an avid bow hunter. I'm trying to fill my tag with a big bruiser and haven't been able to close the deal yet. I've had a couple of encounters, but that we'll save that for the deer hunting episode of
right.
the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. So we apologize first and foremost.
I mean, it wasn't entirely you, right? I have these phone calls at all hours of the day with, you know, people
yeah,
in different
your whole
countries
real life and, job thing.
Yeah, my whole real life job thing. So let's not concern ourselves with that anymore, and let's get to the task at hand, which was previewing this game between the Gophers and the Boilermakers. All right, Ryan, we were in the pre-production meeting. Everybody thinks we're going to win, and it's a unique situation where we're going to go, what Minnesota team is going to show up? So let's start off with injuries, which we always cover.
Yeah, so when the depth chart came out Tuesday morning, you look at the five players that were listed as out: Ace Rogers, Zoe Creighton, Alex Starks, Jonah Persig, and Brandon Lingen. I do anticipate Jonah Persig being back this week, which, from every indication I've been told, from every source I've been told, Jonah is going to be your starting right tackle against the Purdue Boilermakers this weekend. So what does that mean? That, in my opinion, that means you put Garrison back to left tackle, and you probably rotate him and Donnell Green because Garrison is still battling some injuries. So you allow Donnell and Garrison to rotate there, keep Jared Weiler at left guard, and then let Calhoun and Mays rotate at right guard as they see fit. So Minnesota's best offensive lineman before his injury is now back. We'll see how mobile he is on that high ankle sprain that he's been recovering from for several weeks. I don't anticipate Ace Rogers or Alex Starks coming back. Brandon Lingen, again, I'd be shocked if he played again this season, even though Tracy won't actually say that. And again, I don't understand why, because it's pretty much common knowledge at this point that Brandon Lingen is probably not going to be back this season. So Zoe Creighton may be back, but Zoe Creighton's about your sixth corner right now. And especially with the news that Keontae Harden, Ray Buford, and the other three restraining order guys reached a settlement in court earlier this week. So they are going to be eligible to play whenever, wherever now. So with Keontae and Ray back, I don't know that Zoe Creighton really factors into anything. But other than that, I mean, you look at the injury report, it's pretty clean. I don't really think that there's too much there other than I think it's pretty obvious to me anyway at this point that Mitch is dealing with some kind of a shoulder injury. But for whatever reason, the staff doesn't want to really put – again, in their defense, Luke, I mean, it's not like Minnesota has a questionable, probable, doubtful injury report like the NFL does.
Right.
But my guess would be if they did, Leidner would be on there with the shoulder injuries. But – the only other really news to talk about is the fact that Brian Smith was dismissed from the team. He was Minnesota's second leading receiver on the season. He was the second leader in targets with 36. He had 17 catches for 279 yards and a touchdown. That comes out to about 16 yards a catch, which was the highest on the team. I think word has now come out that he was involved in a kind of a bar fight. So this isn't necessarily the first kind of strike for Mr. Smith, and Tracy acted accordingly and decided he wanted to dismiss him from the team. So trying to fill that role is going to be interesting. We'll see if the Melvin Holland and Isaiah Gentry truthers out there get their wish. But from looking at the depth chart, it doesn't appear – well, and I say that looking at the depth chart, knowing that the depth chart is meaningless.
Right.
Because Ray Buford isn't even listed on the depth chart. And Steven Richardson for like half the season wasn't listed as a starter, which caused quite the conundrum
right.
Yeah, among Gopher Twitter. So, I mean, maybe that means more Eric Carter. That would be my guess. But maybe Melvin Holland gets some more reps. Maybe someone can try and jumpstart this passing game. But that's about your injury and news notes, Luke.
All right. So I don't know if you noticed, Ryan, but the weather is absolutely fantastic. It's actually November here, and it's unseasonably warm. So, you know, if you're heading to the game and you're probably listening to this on Saturday morning, sounds like it's going to be a beautiful day to watch a game, and it's a beautiful day to recruit. Ugh. So, what have we got recruiting wise?
I honestly can't stand this weather. I can't, as a deer hunter, this has been absolutely killing me the entire week. But I know there are some fair weather people out there who are Minnesota people who are like,
I love it.
Oh, 73 degrees in the first week of November. That's love fantastic. It. No, I want it to be 43 degrees, a northwest wind at about 9 to 13, and let me sit in my tree stand and watch the deer come by. Oh my gosh, 73 degrees. I'm sweating. I was in the tree stand before we were recording this, and it was absolutely brutal. Last thing I will say about the offensive line, though, I just had a source text me, and don't be surprised if Garrison Wright sees some time at right guard.
Okay.
Don't be surprised to see that at all, which means Donnell Green would be getting the start at left tackle. But don't be surprised if Garrison Wright slides into right guard with Vincent Calhoun dealing with an injury. But we'll have to see. All right. So in terms of recruiting news, Minnesota does have four official visitors on the weekend. Only one of them is a commit, and that is Joshua Croslin, who has been absolutely sensational in his senior season down there in Sabalo, Texas. I mean, I remember there were a couple of games where I was monitoring Twitter, and he was up for player of the week, and I look at his stat line. And I know one of the – and he plays in the highest level – of Texas ball, however many classes there are. I forget if it's 6, 8, or 10. He plays in the highest level, so he goes against the best competition each week. And one of the games, he had like something ridiculous, like 6 tackles for loss and 3 sacks and like 10.5 tackles. And I texted him. I was like, is this right? He's like, yep. So I text one of my Texas guys down there, and I go, how good is this team that his high school went against? He's like, they're one of the best teams in the state. And I told him that what Croslin's stat line won. He's like, holy cow, I'm going to have to go check this kid out live. So he is ranked as the number 51 defensive tackle in the country, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see that move up after his senior season and his senior tape gets out. So Joshua Croslin, a Minnesota commit at defensive tackle, is going to be here. Some other new names to note, and it's going to be interesting to see this weekend. They're headlined by Mr. Bruce Judson. Someone from Cocoa, Florida. He is ranked as the number 47 athlete in the country. And from Gopher Illustrated members already know I have a preview story up with him. And he is exactly what this offense needs. And he is an absolute jitterbug. He's 5'9", 200 pounds. And he's the kind of guy that Derek and I have been stressing that can take a bubble screen and get you 15 yards. He can take a slant and get you a home run. He is the absolute linchpin. If Minnesota were to land him, the story goes that Bruce was committed to Ohio State for a period of time. Then he went up there on a visit, and Urban Meyer forgot his name. And he was like, okay, I'm committing because the head coach doesn't even remember my name. So he's currently committed to South Florida as he is a South Florida kid. But from talking with him, there is nothing firm about that commitment. So Minnesota tried to throw their hat in the ring. They've been successful in doing so. And I know that Bruce is excited to get up here this weekend. He's never seen Minnesota. And for all the stigmas that Minnesota is cold year-round, and it's absolutely infuriating, again, knowing the deer opener tomorrow is going to be 68 degrees and sunny for Gunn. But he's going to get to see a fantastic weather day in Minnesota. And just for basically the entire time he's here, there are a couple other guys on the defensive side of the ball to talk about. One being a Mr. Raheem Lane. He is from Sebastian River, Florida. That's his high school. Minnesota is his first and only offer, and they extended an offer about 2 weeks ago. I know that this is someone that Coach Rob Reeves, this is from his area down in Florida. He was just going through high schools on the bye week, and he stopped into Sebastian River, watched them practice, and he was like, who the heck is this kid? And they told him Raheem Lane. He's like, well, how many different, you know, ACC, SEC offers does he have? And they're like, he doesn't have a single offer, period. And it sounds like Reeves may have went to the defensive staff, had them check out the film. Savo gave the okay, and they offered him. He's all of 6'1", 175 pounds, and he'll absolutely put you on your rear end. He is not afraid to hit you in the mouth, and as you can tell, 6'1", athletic, and not afraid to pop you in the face is something that screams Jay Savelle. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Raheem potentially pull the trigger this weekend, but we'll have to see. And then finally, Bryson Jackson, someone from the great state of Texas, someone that Minnesota offered here about a month ago after things didn't go quite as expected on Dimitri Moore's official visit when he was up here. So Minnesota decided to go a separate way, and that separate way was Bryson Jackson. He is the number 74 outside linebacker in the country. He's from Mansfield, Texas, which is the same city that Everett Williams is from, different high school, but from the same city. He's someone that has a Houston offer and is very high on the Michigan board. I'm talking with our Michigan publisher. He's on a short list of guys for Michigan that do not have an offer, but they are very serious. And so if you don't trust what Minnesota has been doing at linebacker recruiting, which I'm not sure why you wouldn't, and you trust what Michigan is doing there or even Houston, he does have a Houston offer, and Michigan is seriously interested in him as well. Plus, Boise State offered. He already went on a visit there, Boise State being a top 25 team in the Mountain West. So Minnesota's hoping to get in there. He's a very athletic kid, and he's only 6'2", 195, but he is going to be a very good rush end, someone that I think could be in the similar mold, a little bit shorter, Kamal Martin. So they'll have those four official visitors, plus they will have 2018 defensive tackle Elijah Teague from the great state of Illinois, someone that was at the last senior one-day camp this summer, and he only being a sophomore, I remember standing there and just watching him own kid after kid after kid on the board drill. He's someone that is going to have every offer in the Big Ten, in my opinion, by the time it comes around to this time next year. So I would be shocked if Minnesota didn't offer from what I saw at camp. The kid is absolutely fantastic, and especially at a place like defensive tackle where Minnesota needs bodies that are ready to play early, I'd be surprised if they didn't offer. Again, this kid's only a 2018 kid, so he's in his junior season right now. So he's going to have a long wait until National Signing Day. But him coming up on his own dime on an unofficial visit is very good news, Luke.
All right, let's transition and talk about this ball game against Purdue. Let's start with when the Gophers are on defense. So offensively, Purdue is averaging a whole heck of a lot of yards at 415 a game. From a balance perspective, you know, they're about three quarters to a quarter where they're getting about 300 yards in the passing game and just over 100 in 10 in the rushing game. Conversely, you know, the Gophers defensively, they have two different identities, it seems, this season. When with Harden and Buford, they've been much better than without, and they'll have those guys for the remainder of the season. But statistically, they're giving up about 342 yards a game, and about 212 of those are passing yards and 130 are rushing. You know, from a points perspective, Purdue, they put up a decent number of points at 25.4 a game, and the Gophers give up about 22.1. So, Ryan, just curious, what do you expect out of Purdue? I mean, statistically, it seems like they're going to throw.
Minnesota has not faced a team like what you are going to see tomorrow in Purdue. David Blau being their quarterback, he has thrown the ball over 50 times on average over his last three games. So some of that is because of the amount of negative game script that Purdue has been in their last three games. They were getting just obliterated by Iowa. I think it was something like 38-7 at halftime, and they end up putting up 28 garbage time points. They gave Nebraska a pretty good run for their money, but they end up losing by double digits, and they were hanging in with Penn State last week, and then Penn State just put the foot on the gas pedal and put up 62 points on them. So David Blau has been playing in a bunch of negative game scripts. Do I need to explain what a negative game script is?
I don't think, but I think you may as well, just in case somebody doesn't know.
Yeah. So a negative game script is something to where if you're playing in a negative game script, that just means you're always losing. And if you're losing more times than not, you're going to have to be passing the ball, because who runs the ball to get back in the game? Whereas Minnesota has been able to play in a bunch of positive game scripts, which is them winning so they can establish the run and continue to establish the run. So that'd be the only difference there. But David Blau, in his last three games, he's thrown the ball over 50 times on average. During Big Ten play, which is his last five games, he's averaging 280 yards through the air, more than two passing touchdowns a game, and he's got an 11-5 touchdown to interception ratio. only a completion percentage of 56%. But again, if you're going to be slinging the ball around more than 50 times a game with the amount of or the lack of receiving talent that they have at Purdue, it's certainly going to be interesting. When you look at their rushing game, they legitimately cannot run the ball at all. I can't stress this enough, and that's half the reason they're throwing the ball as much as they are. They are the worst team in the Big Ten in running. They've ran the ball 137 times, which is the lowest, but the reason they're doing that, half of that is because they're always behind and they don't run the ball, but the other half is because they're only averaging 2.6 yards per carry in Big Ten play. That is abysmal. Okay, they legitimately can't run the ball. So if you can't run the ball and you're always losing, what are you going to do? You're going to pass.
Right.
And the other interesting note here about the Purdue offense is their receivers. David Blau loves to spread the ball around. And what I mean by that is his leading receiver on the season has 30 catches. But there are five other receivers, or I'll put it into these kind of terms. Six receivers have caught more than 24 balls on the season for Purdue, but none have caught more than 30. They have a receiver who has 30 receptions, 29 receptions, 29 receptions, 24 receptions, 23 receptions, 23 receptions. So what that tells you is he's going to be spreading the ball around a lot. Their leading receiver to note is D'Angelo Yancey. He's the one that leads them in catches, targets, touchdowns, receiving yards. He's going to be a good test for Keontae Harden and Jalen Myrick. But it's going to be an interesting test for this defense as well, because when you look at what Minnesota wants to do on the defensive side of the ball, I think your key has to be to get after the quarterback. You can't allow him to get in rhythm early or just get in rhythm, period, because if he's going to be throwing so much, which I truly expect him to throw north of 45 times,
sure,
which in a Big Ten game is something you don't see very often. So guys like Hank Epke, Carter Coughlin, Kamal Martin, Winston Dilady-Boudair, Steven Richardson, these guys have to be able to get after the passer and get some pressure in him, make him throw some 50-50 balls where guys like Keontae Harden and Antoine Winfield, Demaryius Travis can go up and do some things there and potentially get an interception. So I think stopping or making sure that you're getting after the passer is your first key. I'm also really interested to see how the corners play Purdue, because you've seen Minnesota not play a lot of press coverage of late, which is you've seen the last few games. If Minnesota's not in press coverage with their corners, what the opposing offenses are doing are throwing bubble screens or just short hitch routes with a receiver out there, or doing a swing pass with a running back out of the backfield to put the running back in space with two-on-two blocking with their wide receiver to the cornerback. So I wonder if what Jay Sabo is going to come out and play. Again, history would show you and the tape would show you Jay is not going to put his corners in press, which means that Purdue is likely going to be able to dink and dunk their way down the field in the first quarter or so. But it'll be interesting to see if he comes out and press and really makes these Purdue wide receivers beat the cornerbacks with Keontae Ray, Chanot, Jalen Myrick, and then with the safeties and Demaryius Travis and Antoine Winfield Jr. I'm very intrigued to see what Jay Saville does schematically going against an offense, something that he hasn't seen a whole lot of this year.
Right. It sounds, and this is going to kind of hurt to probably hear, but this team scares me. Like it reminds me of 2014 a little bit, where they have a lot of weapons, right? And you have to, they're going to spread the field. And I'm just concerned when that is difficult to defend. And I know that they're struggling. I know they're a struggling team, but this has been something the Gophers have not handled well in the past.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have to see again. I think that D'Angelo Yancey can do some things, and obviously that's reflected among his statistics because he does have 30 receptions, but 18.6 yards per catch with six touchdowns. I mean, he's their biggest big play threat. But I think, again, it's going to come down to whether Minnesota's defensive back show up or just what Minnesota team shows up. Again, we've talked about it religiously on this podcast. I don't know what team is going to show up each and every week. So is this one of the weeks where the defense and the special teams show up, but the offense doesn't show up? Or is this one of the games where it's going to be a 41-38 game because the defense, right, for whatever reason, won't show up? Again, when you look at statistics, with Keyonte and Ray in the lineup, Minnesota in their last three Big Ten games has given up 14, 10, and 17 points. Right. Now, in my, we'll get to my prediction a little bit later, but I think that Purdue is going to be somewhere between 17 and 24 points, and I think some of that is going to be accumulated in garbage time. So I think it's going to come down to whether you think Minnesota can show up on offense, because I think the defense has shown when they have their players that are healthy or not in legal issues, they show up more times than not.
Yeah, I guess my big point is that, you know, historically they've had some trouble with these quick passing teams, and I know that they want to try and keep them in front of them, but I just think of 2014 when it looked like they should have just blown Purdue out, but Purdue just kept hanging around and hanging around and hanging around and just couldn't find a way to stop them per se. But I totally see your point.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that game was the 39-38 game.
Yeah, Santoso hit the like last second field goal to win it.
Yeah, the 52-yarder to put Minnesota over the top there. So, again, it comes down to whether you think Minnesota is going to play their first complete game of the season.
Yep. Yeah, it comes down to, do you stoop down to the level of your opponent, or can you play above them? And I have yet to see that, I should say. Okay, let's switch to when the Gophers are on offense. So from a points perspective, Purdue is allowing 36.9 points a game, while Minnesota is scoring 32.1. From a yards perspective, you know, Minnesota is putting up 377 yards a game, and they're throwing the ball with 170 yards, and, you know, they're rushing it at 207. When you look at Purdue's defense, they are, oh, man, they got to be just borderline putrid. They're giving up almost 450 yards a game, and 250 of those are rushing yards, and 199 are passing. So, Ryan, what are we going to see from a Gopher offense? And I mean, it has to be obvious, right? They're just going to run the ball.
Like, Purdue's defense is legitimately horrendous. Like, I know we've talked about a lot of bad defensive teams that Minnesota's been able to go against, but Purdue probably takes the cake. So, five games in the Big Ten for Purdue, which I think is a pretty healthy sample size considering where we are here in Big Ten play. Purdue, out of 14 teams, is dead last in yards per play, giving up 7.2. Touchdowns allowed, 27. Yards per game, 487. Their rushing defense is giving up 6.8 yards per carry, dead last in the Big Ten, and they are dead last in the Big Ten in rushing touchdowns against them. With 18.
Well, how about this? You look at their last five, or their five Big Ten games, they've given up 62 points, 27 points, 49 points, 31 points, and 50 points, and they're only 1-4 in Big Ten play.
Like, again, they're bad. And I really hope Minnesota's offense shows up. Especially, I hope this offensive line with Jonah Persig back in the lineup can do some things, because Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks have to be looking at this, seeing that they're giving up 6.8 yards per carry, 18 rushing touchdowns through five games, which is just south of four a game. I would be absolutely flabbergasted if both play the entire game and they'd come away less than anything than 100 yards and a touchdown each. I think that this rushing offense is going to be just fine, and I'd be shocked if Minnesota had to do anything really through the air, just like we've seen in the previous games. But when you look at Purdue's pass defense, I think it's a little deceiving because they're fifth in the Big Ten in passing yards against.
Yeah.
But when you dig a little deeper, they're second to last in yards per completion at 8.1 and touchdowns against at 9. The reason that Purdue looks like they're a good passing defense team.
Nobody throws it.
Exactly, because why the heck, again, so many teams are playing in positive game scripts and are able to just run the ball down the throat. Why would they need to pass the ball? So there's just not a lot to get excited about on this Purdue defense. And again, I like how I'm saying all this. In the back of my mind, you're like, you're jinxing this team because Minnesota's going to find a way to only put up like 20, 24 points, and it's going to be 20 to 18. Minnesota's going to win the game. I can't legitimately see a scenario where this offense scores anything less than 31 points. Again, with Jonah Persig back, I just think that this offensive line is going to be able to take things to it where they were beforehand and where Jonah was playing extremely well, whether that is Garrison Wright sliding into guard then or leaving Donnell at left tackle. I just think that Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks are far too talented. I think this is the game where Shannon Brooks finally breaks one. He hasn't broken one here in a few games. I think that he breaks one of 45-plus yards for a touchdown. Again, I think that this offense, I don't know that Mitch is going to have to throw the ball more than 20 times. I think in the last few games he's thrown it 18 and 19 times respectively. Yes, some of that is because this passing offense is just
struggling.
I think struggling is a kind way to put it.
Yeah.
So I don't think that Mitch is going to have to be able to going to need to pass the ball, but I'd like to see some more deep shots down the field. Again, I think Purdue's going to have to put 7-8 in the box, which means you're going to have one-on-one matchups in the outside, and hopefully Rashad Still I wasn't a big fan of the way he played last game in terms of attacking the ball. So maybe someone else in this passing game. Again, I'm not really entirely sure who you want to go to there. So maybe Minnesota gets a deep pass completion, but I don't see a lot of indicators that would tell me Purdue's defense is going to really be showing up. There are a couple of guys to note on their defense. One being Evan Panfil, which is their defensive end. He leads the team in tackles for loss and sacks. So I think that this offensive line for Minnesota is going to have a little bit of a test there. So Evan Panfil is a name to watch there. But again, I don't really see this being too much of a big test for this Gopher offense.
All right, let's get to keys to the game and to predictions. So to lead into the predictions, let's look at the betting line. So the Gophers are a 17-point favorite with a over-under of 57. Purdue has fared actually pretty well against the spread. They're 4-4. They're 2-4 as an underdog. And the Gophers still haven't been great. They're 3-5 against the spread. And as the favorite, they're only 1-4. And actually, at home, they're 0-5 against the spread thus far. So, Ryan, what are your keys to the game?
You know, we've talked about it a lot already. But, Luke, I want to hear your prediction first.
All right. So, you've heard my nervousness, at least in a little bit of detail. I don't love the matchup in terms of, you know, the number of athletes that Purdue can spread out, and I still have scars from 2014. But I do think the Gophers will come out victorious. I think that you know they'll feature the running game, you know, quite heavily. I would probably put my money on 35-21 Minnesota.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. So we've talked about my first key a lot, and that's just take advantage of a horrible defense. It really doesn't matter what statistic you look at for Purdue. They're all going to tell you the same thing, and that's that this Boilermaker defense isn't very good at all. Again, we've talked about it in 5 Big Ten games. They're dead last in yards per play, touchdowns, yards per game, rushing yards per carry, and rushing touchdowns. So this can't set up any better for this Minnesota rushing attack. Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith have to be salivating looking at this matchup on paper. So it's going to come down to whether this offensive line can continue to put these running backs in good situations to where, and you looked at Minnesota's touchdown runs last week, there were multiple times where it'd be from 8, 9, 19 yards out, and these running backs weren't even touched into the end zone. And that's where Minnesota was really executing power really well. And so it's going to come down to whether this offensive line can make sure that these guys are getting to the second level untouched. And if they can, I think that these guys could have some big games. And again, we talked about it. Purdue against the pass isn't very good as well. So Minnesota has to be able to take advantage of this really struggling Purdue Boilermaker defense. My number two key to the game is stop David Blough in this Boilermaker passing offense. And when I say that, I don't really mean completely stop him, because again, he's thrown the ball more than 50 times a game in his last 3 games. So I don't know that the statistics are necessarily going to look very favorable for this Gopher defense, because there's probably going to be some garbage time points there. But Blough is going to sling it around the yard, and Minnesota's passing defense is going to be tested. Luckily for them, the legal issues are now cleared up, and Keontae Harden and Ray Buford are going to be playing. So Minnesota's going to be at full strength in this secondary this week. Plus, Jack Lynn is now going to be playing in a full game as well after playing in only one half. We talked about it already as well. Purdue is going to have to pass the ball because they can't run. 2.6 yards per carry on 137 attempts in the Big Ten play. They can't do anything on the ground, and Minnesota's got a pretty stout run defense as well. So we're going to have to see how this back seven really handles this passing attack, and hopefully the front four can get some pressure. And then finally, Minnesota has to stay disciplined. I know that we've talked about this basically every week, but this week there's some really interesting stats. So for whatever reason, and I think it's probably – we'll come back to that. So for whatever reason, opponents have been extremely susceptible to penalties against Purdue. As in five Big Ten games, opponents have committed 53 penalties for 469 yards. That comes out to just north of 10 penalties a game for 93.8 yards. That is number one in the Big Ten by 12 penalties or 131 yards. That is such an odd stat.
That's super goofy.
I know. So my opinion on that is that teams get undisciplined because they're playing up by so much, so they get lazy and they start committing penalties. But just know, a Minnesota team that is struggling with penalties. Again, Minnesota is tied for first in the number of penalties they've committed in Big Ten play, and they're fourth to last in terms of – so they have the fourth most amount of penalty yards a game. So I'm very interested to see how Minnesota plays this. Plus, Ryan Santoso and Emma Carpenter have to start and find some consistency in the punting and kickoff game. Santoso has been struggling from punt to punt, and Carpenter has 6 kickoffs out of bounds through 8 games. So both need to find some consistent play. So let's get to the prediction. So again, we've talked about it. Keontae and Ray are going to be back, so I feel pretty good. We've talked about that, how Minnesota's allowed 14, 10, and 17 points in their last 3 Big Ten games with those two guys in the lineup. Some other stats to note is that Minnesota is the number one team in the Big Ten in the turnover margin. They are +7 through Big Ten play, and Purdue is second to last with -6. So, again, statistics would say Minnesota's going to win the turnover battle, and if they are, they get more possessions on offense, which should accumulate more points. Purdue is also the second to worst team in kickoff coverage, as they're allowing 35.8 net yards per kickoff. So you look at what Keontae Harden and Rodney Smith have been able to do there. Maybe Minnesota is able to flip field position like they've been able to do so many times here this season in the kickoff game. And then finally, Purdue is allowing their opponents to convert third downs at a 41% clip. So all that being said, I don't really expect this game to be close with the additions back on defense. You look at what Minnesota's strengths are on offense is running the ball. Purdue is awful at defending the run. I think this is a game where Minnesota gets a victory 38-20. And I think 10 of those points are garbage time points to make this game look closer than it really is.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the Gophers respond, you know, to a game like this. You know, we talked a lot about the Rutgers game, how they're able to get up fast, and then, you know, they kind of lapsed in discipline, etc. This might be another opportunity if they get up fast to stay on top of that. And, you know, to your point, the penalties, they're indicative of people lose focus against this team. And just like Iowa, you know, Iowa won big, but they were up real big and allowed a lot of garbage time points. So, it'll be an interesting ball game nonetheless.
Yeah, it's just such a weird stat. So again, I don't know if I explained it extremely thorough, but Purdue's opponents have committed 12 more penalties than the next closest team. So Purdue's opponents have committed 53 penalties against Purdue. The next worst team has committed only 41 against their opponent.
Right, and that's just in Big Ten play. You got to keep in mind.
That is such a crazy stat, and so Minnesota is going to have to stay disciplined, because I can tell you that the boo birds are going to come out if they're going to continue to go back to these pre-snap penalties. So we'll have to see how it plays out. But again, I think this is a game where hopefully Minnesota can show up. Again, I don't know what team we're going to see on Saturday. My guess would be we're going to see a one that's got a lot of success on offense, and hopefully Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith are able to, have big games again. So we see Connor Rota and Kobe McCrary in the fourth quarter.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. So if you're listening to the podcast, again, really appreciate you listening, and it's a lot of fun. Sorry again for getting this out later than normal. Enjoy the weather. Get out there and rake some leaves. Don't worry about Mr. Burns. He'll get some cold weather. It's fine. Just don't worry about that.
And for anybody who is going to be out in a deer stand this weekend and maybe, you know, not being able to watch the game, if you're able to harvest a deer this weekend, shoot me a picture of it on Twitter. You know, I love to see and hear different deer hunting stories. So I will be in a tree stand Saturday morning as well. I got some KFAN radio responsibilities around 12:30, so I got to get out around 11. But hoping to finally be able to have an encounter with a big buck I call Kahuna. I've seen him a couple times this week, haven't been able to close the deal yet. So hopefully I got a good story to tell. So if you are going out deer hunting this weekend, and if you are able to harvest something, shoot me a picture of it on Twitter. Love to see that kind of stuff.
All right. Again, thanks for listening. If you want, rate the podcast on iTunes or any kind of podcasting app that you use. And we appreciate you listening. And go Gophers.